Welcome to the Be Ruthless Show, where we have the conversations that other people don't. The conversations that other people won't. I'm your host, Sam Ruth, and I'm ready to make a lot of noise and disrupt things, ruthlessly. Thanks for being here today. Now let's get to it. Welcome back to the Be Ruthless Show. I'm your host, Sam Ruth, and thank you for joining me during these holiday episodes where so many people deserve time off, but so many others are still struggling, and I did not want to take a break from episodes that many, many people need during the difficult holidays that so many others think are just easy and simple. So what I decided to do is give you highlights from Healing Together Through the Holidays, which was Grief Hab's first annual event during National Grief Awareness Week. And no one knows National Grief Awareness Week exists. So during that week, with an extra eighth day of bonus material, because I couldn't squeeze it all into one week, I featured over 50 speakers from all over sharing their different types of loss and all the different ways that they have learned to get through it, all the different resources and all the different modalities. So I selected some of the most powerful talks. They're all extremely powerful, but some of the ones that I have gotten a ton of feedback about, that they were really easy to watch and get through, while others were a little bit more triggering and led to some emotions. And maybe we want something that we can get through without getting really into our feelings, something that gave us quick, simple tools to use right away, and something that can apply to all different kinds of loss. So while I think you can tune into absolutely any talk from the event, which is still available, even though the live part of it is over, the library is still there. You can click the links, register, and access all of that material because the holidays are still happening. People are still struggling, and these resources help. So these talks are just some of the ones that really hit home with people dealing with all different types of things. So thank you for being a part of this community and being a part of what helps me get through my world without Jim physically here. I hope that this will inspire you to please, please share these resources with people in your world, because people do struggle silently. Grief never ends, but it is invisible. Consider sharing the awareness calendar that has not only National Grief Awareness Week, but all of the awareness days and weeks and months that this world needs to be acknowledging and devoting more time and energy to, and more resources, and having a calendar on the wall that reminds you of International Widows Day. You know, maybe that makes you think of calling someone who is a widow and who can just use a little extra support. It means so, so much. And there's hundreds in here. I'll just pick another. World Suicide Prevention Day. So, so many days and dates. Grab yours, share the event, share the calendar, share the resources, and I hope you will enjoy these highlights and go look and listen to all of the other talks. Until next time, always be ruthless. See you soon. Welcome back. This is such a gift. So excited for our guest right now. Eleni is married. I don't know how to exactly pronounce your last name now. Is it Farias?
Farias.
Farias is an international best-selling author and speaker, co-host of the Glowing Goddess web show, and founder of the Empower Mentor Movos Movement, Kali Taros Life. She's a soul-driven mom on a mission to end the cycles of limit in people of all ages. She's here today to share her story and message on the stigma of overdose and suicide. I couldn't be doing this event without her. I couldn't be here without her. She has a heart bigger than this world. She is the kindest soul. I love you dearly. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. What a beautiful introduction, Sam. Thank you. And as you were putting together, and the more I learned about your mission, and the more I thought about it, like grief is something that we all experience at some point in our life, and it's just the subject that gets tucked away. So when I had an opportunity to bring my story forward and hopefully offer some light, you know, because it wasn't until after the traumas of grief and loss that I actually, my whole life skyrocketed. And great massive change occurred for me. So if I can share my wisdom, if I can share strength, and I can share hope, then I can share some light, you know, and perhaps some of you watching this, you know, are family members or friends or people affected by suicide or an overdose. And I can relate. Perhaps you're in a dark place now where you've gone through some grief and maybe some thoughts that aren't so light filled are going through your mind. I'm here to comfort you, and I'm here to offer you what my experience has taught me. So let's first of all begin by defining stigma. A stigma is defined as a mark of disgrace associated with a particular circumstance, quality, or person. A mark of disgrace. Stigma, right? Today, we're going to have a discussion about several stigmas. The stigma of suicide, the stigma of overdose, and one more that you might not even be considering. And that is the stigma of judgment for those of us left behind. So, this is one of those speeches that I practice a lot of times. And I, you know, I'm a world-class speaker. This is what I do for a living. But this one hits a little different because this is my story. And there's never been an opportunity for me to speak this story out loud in the way that it's going to be spoken today. So I'm going to take a moment now to just call in intention that my words be guided with light and love, and that the message of my heart reaches your soul, and that together we navigate through this, and what needs to come up with my story will come up, and you will hear exactly what you need to hear. So you know, when the phone rings at 5:30 in the morning, it's probably not a phone call that you want to answer. And when I answered the phone and I heard the voice of my father, who could barely get the words out, just in complete hysterics, this big, strong man, I first thought something had happened to my brother. He had been having some challenges with addiction. And I, you know, he didn't look very good the last few times I'd seen him. And I knew there were some circumstances happening. I thought something happened to my brother. But what he told me after that shook me to my core. He said to me, "Eleni, your brother's in the hospital." And at first I felt relief by that. I'm like, okay, he's alive. "But your mother's dead." I said, "What?" And then I'm thinking, like, what happened? They had a suicide pact. My mother had gone and borrowed a generator from their neighbor, and they taped up all the windows. And it's a very rare thing for one person to survive the suicide pact and you know, the other to pass. But somebody had smelled fumes in the middle of the night and called the authorities. And when they got there, my mother was already gone. My brother was barely coherent. And they took him to the hospital. Now, once he was in the hospital, still in a very confused state, none of us were even allowed to see him. They had him cuffed, handcuffed to his bed, you know, accusing him of murdering my mother. And he was interrogated in that state and taken down and made to identify the body of my mother, which they had already begun the autopsy on. And I never got to hug my brother, not for quite some time after that point, because he was immediately taken to prison and charged with the murder of my mother. Now, what we as the family were not aware of was that there were notes, suicide notes from both of them in the house, addressed to each one of the family members. They wrote notes for all of us. The neighbor testified that my mother had taken the generator. Now, what really made this challenging was my shift from, I cannot grieve my mother. I've got to get my brother out of prison. He does not belong there. He needs psychological and he needs help right now. He doesn't belong in prison. He needs help. And so my focus went there, but this became a national news story. The day after my mother passed away, I was getting phone calls from all kinds of people not to turn on a certain radio station, a nationally syndicated radio show, because they were talking about my mother and my brother, because the suicide pact, again, is such a rare thing. And they mocked my brother for not being able to get the job done. And they were saying just very cruel things. The stigma popped up for me that I needed to defend them. I needed to defend their honor. Because what the world was seeing in all of these news stories, and what I feel like the stigma is that people are making these assumptions on people who overdose or choose to take their own life, that they're weak, that they're losers, that they can't handle things, that you know, X, Y, Z, whatever story you've ever told yourself, that they're going to hell, whatever things you have heard or have been exposed to in media or other people have said to you, or that you've actually thought yourself, right? All of those things are racing through my mind, that other people are thinking this about two people who I could not believe that this is where we were. My mother was just a light, the happiest person. This shocked anyone who knew her. Shocked. I couldn't even, the people reaching out to me who actually knew her were completely blown away. Nobody had any idea. I didn't have any idea. I talked to her 3 days before. I knew there was some things going on. I knew my brother had been staying there. It was hard for her to see him in that state. I knew that, you know, her money was not being kept the way it should. It was disappearing. I said, Mom, do you need any groceries? Do you need some help with any bills? What can I do for you? Oh, Lenny, everything's great. We're good. I mean, it's really, your brother's been doing really well. I feel a positive momentum coming. This was like our last conversation. She was so upbeat. And anyone who knew her just knew she was so extremely talented. A laugh that could shake a room. Like, she walked into a room and she owned a room. Her energy was just that powerful. And my brother, extremely charismatic young man. Just a very good looking kid, intelligent, like genius level intelligence, great athlete, popular. And like I said, just very charismatic. Everyone loved Gus. Like, the fact that he had even gotten addicted the way that he did was shocking to me. He was always so clean and into fitness, but he had had a surgery on his shoulder. And like so many addicts, that's where it begins, right? The pain pills. Before you know it, it's heroin. So now my brother is in prison. My mother is gone. And I'm feeling like I need to get my brother out of prison and clean up his name. I need to defend my mother's honor because I felt like people were judging her. It was all over every newspaper. It was on, like I said, nationally syndicated shows. It was on some national news stories. And I felt like all eyes were on me. All eyes were on me. And when the trial began, just walking into the courtroom, reporters asking me questions, like literally like paparazzi taking my pictures, sunglasses on, hats. I had no comment. I never had any comment because it wasn't the time or place to speak my truth. I will say that we got my brother acquitted of all those charges. And it wasn't until that trial that I found out that they had left me notes. Each of them, my mother, first time I heard her note to me, her letter to me was read aloud in a court of law. And this part still triggers me. I didn't know she wanted someone to donate her hair. She had hair down to her waist, beautiful hair. And I didn't know that she wanted her hair donated. But I can take great comfort in, you know, we donated what we could of her, and that you know, her eyes help somebody see in the future. And I take great comfort in that. The stigma of it, though, you know, we're left behind feeling like it's our job to paint the picture, because to us, there's somebody that we love, somebody that we valued, and we knew them, the real them, the soul them, and we just want the rest of the world to know it. But then I come to the next stigma. Was this in some way about me? What was that really about? My needing to defend their memory. I look deeply at it. Maybe I was afraid that their choices were some kind of reflection of me, that somehow I wasn't enough. Somehow I failed them, that I was too distant. Maybe I could have done more. Why didn't I see the signs? Is this why I cared so much about what other people thought? Why am I choosing to claim the actions of people just because they're related to me as a reflection of me and who I am as a person? And now making it my responsibility to try to put on some kind of picture for the rest of the world so that they're not judged and then maybe I'm not judged. Maybe then I'm not judged. So what did I do? I started to have those kinds of thoughts and reflections upon this. Like, what is this really about? Okay, if I'm going to honor someone's legacy, now my mother's gone. My brother, you know, at this time, he was still in the facility. He was still locked up. And I had to put some kind of service together for my mother. And I'd already started to have this awareness. Like, this was a couple weeks after I let things kind of relax for about 2 weeks. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do a celebration of life. I'm going to do a celebration of life. What can we do to honor legacy in a way that's meaningful, right? We can choose to think of something that was important to them and honor that. My mother was was known as a friend to all animals. She, growing up in the neighborhood, if there was ever an animal, wild or domesticated, that was injured, it was brought to us. I've seen that woman rebuild a turtle's shell that had been run over by a lawnmower. I mean, she built it a fiberglass shell. The thing lived with little bandages on it. I've seen her nurse squirrels back to health, bunnies, you name it. But she was known as a friend to all animals. And I thought to myself, okay, so for me, the way to leave the positive lasting impression is to have a life celebration and to make it a fundraiser for animal organizations. And that's what we did. And I couldn't even tell you how many truckloads. I think it was 5 truckloads of items came in, and a nice amount of monetary donations, in which I was able to contribute in her name. And that, you know, I think about it now, that gave me a lot of peace. And that's what it took for me to feel like I honored her legacy and that I was able to take the stigma off of it. But again, I bring us back to the truth of it. It's like, why does that matter so much? Why do we even care what other people are thinking at that time when we should really be thinking and caring about ourselves? We should be caring about ourselves and what's going on with us. I wasn't checking in with me at the time. I'm going to be very, very clear. And for anyone who, you know, might be new in the throes of this, like some kind of situation like this has just happened to you, stop caring about what other people are thinking and focus on what you are thinking. Are the thoughts in your head healthy? Are they healthy? Okay. Not from a place of judgment, just from a place of checking in. Where am I at right now? What kind of thoughts are circulating in my mind right now? Because as a teacher of law of attraction and a mindset coach, one thing I can tell you is the thoughts we're thinking are generating a magnetic pull. So we really want to be in tune with ourselves. And yes, we can honor the sadness. Yes, we can honor the grief. Yes, we can honor the pain. But we want to just be really vigilant about tuning in with ourselves. Are we taking action on them to try to give ourselves the tools that we need to get through these kinds of challenges? If you care so much about what others think. For me, it's like, you know, talk to a trained professional, a coach, a counselor, or a support group to get some valuable opinions of what others think. You know, I read this great book. It's called The Four Agreements. And it says that, how do they word it? Other people's opinions are none of our business. You know, don't get offended by those kinds of things. And it's so true, right? Like, that stuff is out of our control, whatever they're going to say about us or our loved ones. No one can take from us the truth. And we don't have to force it out there or into a mold for it to be true. Because the only ones that need to be at peace with it are us. Us. We're the ones who need to be at peace in our own mind. So I do, you know, really encourage the art of forgiveness. The art of forgiveness. The forgiveness prayer saved me in that time. Forgiveness not just for the people who were judging. Forgiveness for my mother and my brother who had made this decision that just left me like, what? I was right here. You could have just asked me for help. Now, I myself and personally at this time, I had about 12 years, no, maybe a little less, 11, 10 or 11 years sober. Like I could have offered so much help. So forgiveness for your loved ones, forgiveness for the other people, there's, you know, out of our hands, but mostly forgiveness for yourself, because you were enough. You were worthy. You were always valuable. Other people's choices are not a reflection of what you were or weren't to them. That was their own path. So at first when I started saying the forgiveness prayer, and I am going to share this resource in this space, I have a bunch of them printed up. So I'm going to actually upload them here to share with any of you who might need the forgiveness prayer. At first I said it numbly. I said it numbly every day. I didn't mean a darn word of it. Nope. But I said it. And eventually, what I can only describe as a higher power, God is what I choose to call that, just started to fill my being with peace and with light. And eventually, I started to mean the words on those papers. And the sting wasn't there anymore when I thought about the media, when I thought about what the people might be thinking, or they might think that about my mother, or they might think this about my brother. Fast forward a few years. We've got my brother out of prison. And my gosh, what a joy. He lived in the same town as me. And he made two beautiful babies. Literally found the love of his life. Like, they were just like the most gorgeous, perfect couple. He was really thriving in his, what he had his degree in, some kind of, I never really knew what he did, something to do with financing and investing. And he was thriving, beautiful $750,000 house, Porsche, wife's driving a Range Rover, and they seemed to have it all. Like, he was happy. Like, his hugs, oh my gosh, my brother was amazing. Just the charisma. Everyone loved Gus. Everyone loved Gus. And, you know, when he got out of prison, one of the first things that I'm like, I had to get him to do something. I was responsible for his care. Like, I took that stand. I voluntarily took that stand and put my name on the line with that judge that I would look after that young man should he be released. So I took that role very seriously. And I told him, you're going to volunteer. And the volunteer option that he chose was that he would dress as Superman and go to the children's hospital. And I mean, if he didn't look like Superman, just spitting image, it was very fitting. And that's where he met his future wife. She was Wonder Woman. And yeah, so he spent all that time with the kids. And then his career just blossomed. Everything was working out great for him. Then another call. at 6 o'clock in the morning. This one, another shocking blow. It was my older, I have an older brother. He was in tears, and I just knew something happened to Gus. Now, I have something to tell you, but I don't want to tell you. I said, it's Gus. And Gus, you know, Gus had always been my best friend. My older brother didn't grow up in the house with us. He lived in New York. It's just me and my brother. And home wasn't the most stable place when we were children. We only had each other. Nobody knew what happened. He had just gotten up at 5 in the morning to give the baby a bottle. The baby's 9 months old at the time. To give the youngest child a bottle so his wife could sleep. He kissed her on the forehead, kissed his wife. He went in the bathroom and she heard a big thump. And he was gone. He just collapsed. Now, we really didn't know at the time what had happened. There was really no signs of drug use going on at that time. Everything had seemed to be really great. And things came back confusing from his autopsy. This is the first time I think I've ever said this publicly. And I kept this secret because for me, it's because of the stigma. I didn't want people to judge my brother like he was, you know, some kind of scumbag drug addict or something like that, you know, because that's the stigmas that people think when they hear someone overdoses. That people are low lives or losers. Well, I'm a recovered addict. I'm no low life. But I kept this secret for a long time. My brother had purchased an Adderall, a prescribed drug a lot of people use for focus and energy. Except what he had gotten was made on the streets and it was laced with fentanyl. And his heart, his lungs just gave out on him. 6'2" muscle man who ate as clean as a whistle, dropped from fentanyl like that. And his wife and I had gone through his phone and we had seen the messages between a friend that he bought that from. And we made sure to let them know, not to let them get out. That weighed on me for a long time. You know, do I put that out there? Do I talk to people about that? But again, that whole thing that popped up with my mom, with the judgment, popped up for me. And instead of worrying about myself and how I was feeling and how I was doing, I made it all about protecting their honor. You know, it's almost like a way of projecting, of redirecting. So we don't really have to deal with what's really going on, right? If I can just worry about what everyone's thinking about my brother and really just try to post all these pictures about how magnificent he was and all these pictures of him at Children's Hospital, people will remember him that way. People will remember him that way. Like that, to me, was more important. But again, I feel like knowing what I know as a mindset coach now, knowing what I know, it was all just a diversion. It was all just a mechanism that I was doing to not focus on myself. So how do you bring the focus back to yourself? Well, I'll tell you that after my brother passed, I was a little angry. literally only for like an hour. I was a little angry at God. Because I didn't understand. Like, why did you let him survive the first time? Why didn't you just let him go with mom? Why survive another 5 years, make two babies who are now both under 3 years old that he won't be there to raise? Like this, just, I'm a very faithful girl. Just at this point, I'm a minister. It doesn't make any sense to me. And all I wanted to do was pray. And when I prayed, I actually saw and had a conversation with what presented as Jesus. And I was shown a watch. And then I just saw all these memories that I had of the last 5 years of my brother free from drugs at that time. Like he was thriving, holding his babies. I saw memories of him holding my daughter. He took my daughter to her first daddy-daughter dance because her father wasn't available. And like, I had all of these memories of things that wouldn't have happened if he had died in his attempt to do it. So I understood that I was given the gift of time. So once I had some peace, I could stop like diverting my feelings and really just kind of get back to the truth of taking care of myself. You know, what to do? How do you pick up the pieces from something like that? The first tool I offered you is forgiveness. You know, I'm going to share that prayer with you. Work on forgiving yourself. Work on forgiving those departed. Work on forgiving anybody, because holding that onto that resentment, that is just an energy that is not going to help you get the peace that you need to feel. There's no peace and resentment are like opposites. So if you're looking for peace, forgiveness is the pathway there. The second tool I can offer you, and that's how to stop caring what others think, is really putting yourself first. Start making yourself a priority. If there's a coach that you want to work with, do it. If there's a support group that you feel like would benefit you to join, join the group. If you're feeling like a retreat is speaking to you, go on the retreat. Take care of yourself. We're so worried about what others are thinking of us. The actual vibrational alignment to that is thinking of us ourselves. Thinking of us ourselves. So think of yourself. Do the things that you are intuitively called to do for your well-being. The only thing that should be the focus at that point is not what other people are thinking about the person who is gone, not the situation of being mad at the people involved, but you and your well-being. Because how you're feeling is creating your tomorrow. So doing what you need to do to get through the moments in a supported, healthy way. Am I saying it should be sunshine and rainbows? Absolutely not. But I'm saying to be in tune with yourself when it is and when it isn't, and what you need. Do you need to push your face in the pillow and scream and get it out? Then do it. Do you need to pick up the journal and get all the things? If you're noticing you're replaying things you wish you said, or what you could have done, or that person did this, I call it maleficent journaling, and it's one of my favorite tools. Get that poison down on the paper and stop it from looping in your head. You burn it if you want after. But that will give you so much relief. So much relief. Start getting present in your body. A lot of times we think all the healing is up here, right? I just have to think different thoughts. I have to come with peace in my head. Peace in your body too. We're here having this physical experience. So if we're having some emotional discrepancy, one of the gateways to healing is just to be present in the body. Get aware. Are you feeling very tense? Are you holding it in your body? Breath work will be your saving grace. And I often put it like this, my friends, you know, you take this nice deep inhale, right? Hold it and exhale. In the exhale, there's everything that you're looking for. Relief, peace, and calm. That doesn't cost a thing. It's literally your most valuable resource. What would you do without air? But it's always with you. You can access that at any point, because grief can hit you at any time. You could feel outraged and sick to your stomach just walking through the supermarket. I mean, there were times that it would just hit me. I was so mad. But I always said, in that moment, I have my breath. I might not have my pillow there to scream into or my maleficent journal, but I have my breath. So that is a tool that I encourage you to take and start playing with, working with the power of the breath. It's an instant reliever, but should you choose to sit and really get present in your body, how am I feeling? By taking those deep inhales and exhales over and over, you can feel any tension moving throughout your body. We want to move the emotion throughout the body. We want to release it. I've since all of this happened, I'm a quantum healer. And I do believe that a major cause of dis-ease within people is dis-ease. So negative feelings, negative energy, it settles in the body. So when we take time to just relax, just sit and breathe, we can get in tune with where things might not feel like they're flowing, and then just breathe into those areas and move the energy out. Another tool that I cannot stress enough, standards and boundaries. Create boundaries for yourself. If you have lost a loved one to overdose or suicide, don't, if an obligation or an invitation to something doesn't feel aligned, don't do it. Don't do it. Create, don't feel, this is not the time for people pleasing. It's the time for pleasing yourself. And you don't have to extend yourself when it feels depleting. So how do you know if your boundaries have been crossed? Okay, so you said yes to something, and every time you think about it, you think, oh, I can't believe I have to do this. I don't want to. Put up the boundary. You'll feel such a weight. You don't have to lie. I'm a very honest person. I don't want anything coming back to me that's dishonest. I'm not going to tell you to make up a lie that you have a sore throat or anything like that. I'm just going to call and say, you know, I'm really not feeling like coming to this. It's just isn't aligned for me. And you know, at the time it seemed like a good idea, but I'm just not feeling it today. We don't. Oh, for some reason we feel very obligated when we say yes. Energy is always emotion, right? Yes is not a forever thing. You didn't stamp it into cement. It's okay to say no to people. People might ask you for things, or you might feel like to show the world that you're okay, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. And I'm going to, you know, just keep being out in the world, and I'm going to keep going to work, and I'm going to keep doing all these things just so people know I'm okay. Check in with yourself. Does it bring you great joy? You know, for me, it actually brought me joy. I've lost my mother, my brother, and my father, all in different types of circumstances. With, you know, at a certain point in time with me, just being out around people was helpful for me. But maybe for you, you're feeling like you it's an expectation, so you're doing it, but it doesn't feel so great. Talk to somebody about it. If you're having a hard time establishing your boundary, let them help you. This is what organizations like Grief Hab are for, navigating through situations like this. There's a lot of support out there for you. But definitely creating the standards and the boundaries for yourself, and giving yourself the grace to decide. And not deciding on the spot. Why do we feel that we need to give people answers right away? Oh, let me get back to you. Perfectly acceptable response, right? So give yourself grace, give yourself compassion. Your well-being is the most important. And honestly, not just during times of grief, all the time. Your well-being, first and foremost, always until infinitum. Always. My friends. I'm trying to bring this all together. Because I remember, you know, I remember the rawness. I remember just feeling like all eyes were on me, right? Like when you're the one behind, it's, you know, we're put in this place where we feel like we need to defend the honor, but everyone's really looking at us. And that's when it's okay to retreat a little bit and just tell the world you need a little space for yourself. Just tell the world you need a little space. But listen to yourself, you know what I mean? Check in, act on the things that feel intuitive to you. I mentioned the coaching, the support groups, the retreats. Do the things that feel like, if something about them resonates with you, that's your intuition. It doesn't feel like, oh, I don't want to go and talk to someone. It feels like, wow, there's something about that woman I really identify with. Go on that. That's, you know, that's God working through you. It's, fill your own cup. Spend time outside in nature. Take walks. Do, you know, do the things that make you happy. if you can't even think about what those things are at the time, just again, sitting and breathing, tapping in, flowing the oxygen through the body. If it's challenging for you to put yourself first, because I'm going to be very blunt, I do believe that a large part of the reason why it was so important to me to be understood, that the world wasn't judging my family, like we said earlier, was I really afraid that people were judging me, that I was a failure as a daughter or a sister. Somehow I wasn't enough. Somehow I was afraid that people were looking at these aspects of me. So if this is something that you feel crops up for you, and it might have cropped up several times throughout your life, where you're not making yourself a priority, you're overgiving, a people pleaser, have a hard time taking a compliment, maybe don't feel, this is a worthiness thing. I'm unworthy is the underlying belief. And you know, I've coached for almost a decade now, and I can tell you that one of the biggest limiting beliefs I come up with in probably 3/4 of people is that they're not good enough and they're not worthy. So this could be blocking you from putting yourself first in a time when you need to be putting yourself first more than ever. So I'm going to give you a quick little mind hack. I'm the queen of subconscious mind hacks, and they work quickly without having to do all the deep inner child searching and all that. Yes, I recommend doing the work if you want to, but you know, these are drastic times. We need to get some results fast. You need to make yourself a priority. And even if you are having a hard time believing it, you can use the power of your mind to assist you in putting yourself first. So your subconscious mind has a part of your brain, your physical brain has a part called the reticular activating system. It's right back here. It's about 2 inches long and as wide as a pencil. Now, for as small as this part of your brain is, it is quite remarkable and it holds a pretty large role. Its job is to seek and find and validate all that which you believe to be true. So whatever belief systems you've formed since your childhood, I had some doozies. So whatever belief systems you form since your childhood, your reticular activating system is on a job to just pull forward anything relative to that. So if you've got this, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough thing going on, well, everything about your loved one's passing or anything else in life that the reticular activating system can associate to that, it will. You know, your friend or your boss or a coworker hands you back a project and just asks you to make one little edit on it. Oh, could you add this? The subconscious mind, the reticular activating system is like, not good enough. Need to redo. So, you know, you might find yourself in situations like that because of these belief systems. But the best way to bypass them, to cruise right on around it, is to use this part of your brain to seek what you really want. See, there's something I didn't tell you. The reticular activating system, it has to also answer your questions. So whatever you ask it, it has to seek and validate. Now your brain, the human brain, takes in 11 million bits of information per second. 11 million bits. Your brain just took in 33 million bits of information. Now, if we took that all in at once, I'm pretty sure our heads would like, boom, implode. So the reticular activating system, that's why it does what it does. Only pulls forward what is relevant for you. Now, that has to answer questions also to validate what you're asking it is a truth. You can hack it. So the perfect kind of cues for a situation like this, when you need to be making yourself a priority. Why do I always make myself a priority? Why do I value myself so much? How am I always showing myself so much love? Why am I so worthy? Cue your brain to ask yourself questions like that. Cue your brain 3 or 4 times throughout the day, and your brain will be on a mission in those intervals to seek and validate that. All of a sudden, you're going to notice you're making choices that say, that are boundaries. You're like, you know what? No, I don't feel like doing that. Oh, I feel inclined to go there. You know what? I just want to take a nap. I'm going to do that. Like, your brain will just support these thoughts that you want, this new way of being that you're welcoming in. But you have to, can't just do it once in the morning or like this one time, all that. And Lenny, she told me to use the subconscious mind act. We're interrupting a looping program that has been running for 30 years, 20 years, 10 years. I don't know. But you know, your brain's going to be like, oh, okay. We're used to feeling these dopamine hits and these brain chemical hits of you not being good enough. And now you're just going to think you're going to change it in one day. No, it's going to take some repetition, but it works very quickly, particularly if you're using it 3 or 4 times throughout the day. So my tools and tricks to help you do that, set an alarm on your phone. Okay, so get in the habit of doing it in the morning. Hey, put a post-it, maybe one in the cupboard where you keep your teacups, or one on the bathroom mirror as your little reminder. And then you want to set an alarm on your phone, and it could be on buzz. You don't even need to be saying it. As long as your mind sees it, it'll look down. If you label that alarm, why am I so worthy? Or why do I make myself a priority? Why is it so easy for me to create boundaries? Whatever you want to use. You have it there, the alarm's labeled, like, oh, there it is, boom, mine caught it, seek, seek, seek. Maybe another one about 4 hours later, set another alarm, and then, you know, something before bedtime, something, you know, where you're going to see it and remind yourself to say it. But those are different from affirmations. I call them ask-formations. It needs to be a question to really cue the reticular activating system into gear. And it has to be related to like a belief type of thing. Like, why am I? Why am I? Why is it so normal for me? So really about you and who you are. And that will get your brain rewiring, I guess is the way they say it now. Now, this is a tip that one of the things that I learned from working with Dr. Joe Dispenza when I was helping to reverse a traumatic brain injury in a young man, you know, about really cueing the brain by asking it questions. So I share this with you. I've used it personally to help myself create new standards of worth for myself. And it really just becomes a matter of repetition for you to repave a neural pathway. And within a week or two, you won't even have to do it. You'll already see the evidence. I still like to do it because it just feels good. Like, yeah, why am I so worthy? Okay, we went a lot of years. If this is something, if you find yourself needing to validate to external people, you went a lot of years not feeling worthy. Girl, fella, do it. Let yourself feel the worth. Let yourself feel the love. Self-love is going to be your key. The well-being focus is going to be your key to healing the stigma. The opinions of other people are none of our business. I know what it is from the Four Agreements, that book I mentioned. Don't take anything personally. You know, that person who's judging, what are they going through? Someone who's judging like that probably has their own worthiness issues, right? People who judge are normally filled with the most self-criticism. This I do believe to be true. So how can, this is actually an opportunity for us to get closer to spirit, for us to get closer to our own faith, whatever that might be. That we can have some compassion for someone who would feel the need to judge, knowing that if that family was left behind, knowing all of these things, that they would be in a situation that they would feel inappropriate to judge. I could have some love and compassion for somebody. Somebody's mindset is like that. Like, wow, what have they been through? And honestly, with my higher power, it doesn't matter, right? It's an opportunity for me to just love and let be and love on myself, right? You are your biggest focus in a time like this. Yeah. The only stigma that really matters are the stigmas you're placing upon yourself. That somehow you failed. You were born to win. You were born to succeed. The infinite in you cannot fail. None of this was your fault. You're worthy. You're enough. Those are the only stigmas you need to deal with. So whatever it takes for your well-being, whether it's coaching or support group or taking a program, sometimes self-paced programs can be wonderful. Do it. One of the things that I've offered here today for our wonderful Healing Together Through the Holidays family, My company, Calateros, does a lot of mindset and reprogramming work and healing work and self-love programs. We've put together a lifetime access program just for everyone. And I know that we're going to be sharing the QR code with all of you so that you have access to that material. I'm also going to share my forgiveness prayer with Sam so that everyone can have, can get a look at it, because it saved me. As I felt important enough for me to share with you, because it saved me. So I want to just say thank you. I have so much compassion and love for you. Again, my company, Calateros, we've got a lifetime offer for you, lifetime access to my academy. Hundreds of Eleni videos to guide you through the dark times. But also, if you feel like you need one-on-one support, I do one-on-one work with packages as small as one pick-me-up session to bulks and blocks of sessions. And I put my hand out there if my message resonated and you feel like you need support. You don't have to do it alone. Say yes. All right. So thank you all so much. Thank you for welcoming me and hearing my story, which I've never said publicly like this. So thank you.
I want to open it up for questions. Thank you. I could listen to you always. I talk about you like you are the miracle healer. I live by your affirmations. When someone is going through something, I will say, hold on, you have the words in a way that others don't. So is anyone going through anything medically, emotionally that we haven't covered that you would like to ask now? Can we have information to connect with you, and you can always reach out that way, but you really do. Some people here know I went through something medically recently. I came immediately to you, and you don't go to the negative places. You don't let yourself, like when I said to you, everything's fine, you said, I didn't doubt it for a minute. Like you didn't even go there.
Yeah, because if I believe what I teach, and that's we create with our thoughts, and I'm only going to think the best for you. I'm only going to think the best for myself. I refuse to believe in illness, in disease. I refuse to give it that creative power. If I do, I do believe that people manifest things in their bodies. I've seen miracles. I've seen stage 4 cancer disappear in minutes. The things I've seen can't be explained. So I know what's possible for people. So I've seen it for one person, then I could see it for each and every one of you. Like, I'm not going to say, oh no, it's not possible for that person, even though I've seen it happen multiple times throughout my life. Yeah. I've seen paralysis reverse, brain injuries reverse. I ask God every day, I'm surprised at the light, because he's giving me some shockers. I'd love to see some more, you know? Yeah. I have a friend who, like, I can't wait to see his ALS reversal. They've labeled him with that nasty disease. I'm waiting for the day he stands up and starts dancing. Yeah, but anybody in this space, any part of my message, anything that you have some questions on, or
talk about your what did we do last week just for support for me for this intention for this event? What do you call that group where we did that live?
Oh, Power of Eight group. Yeah. So I run an international Power of Eight group. So there's this awesome, she's actually a scientist. Her name is Lynn McTaggart. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of back history so you understand why I do what I do. So Lynn McTaggart is a famous scientist. She's an author. And her research, she started seeing people healing themselves by thinking positive thoughts, right? By like the kind of work that Dr. Joe Dispenza does. So she had this idea, like, what if we get a bunch of people thinking the same positive thought for that person? So she researched thousands of cases. I mean, she has multiple books. So she's world-renowned speaker. What she found was happening, this is remarkable, was that not only were the participants healing, like the people who were the focus, but the people who were having the positive thoughts were healing from things that weren't even on the table. Like there was a woman there who had arthritis, didn't even think to tell anybody she had arthritis because, oh, this was for somebody else. But she was in the miracle vibe. What we do is we focus on the end result. Like I won't even think about anything else. People apply for groups with me and they'll start to tell me their medical story. I'm like, no, I just want to know what you want. I don't even want that in my consciousness. But I don't want to hear about the 3 years of this. No. So what was happening is because all the people are feeling all this joy celebrating other people's miracles, they're receiving miracles. Frequency doesn't discern. Energy doesn't discern. Oh, we're only going to go there. No, it's channeling through you. So your own body's absorbing it. Now, I've actually witnessed this in my own group. I have one woman who faithfully shows up for my friend who was labeled with ALS. She shows up for him every week. And one week out of the blue, she says to me, Lady, you're not going to believe what happened. I'm like, what? She's like, oh, you know, I've had this rare blood disorder for 20 years. And every year I have to go to, I forget what kind of blood specialist doctor name it was. She's like, I have to go to this doctor and they draw my blood just to test where it's at. She's like, it's just gone. I said, what? She goes, I think maybe it's from coming to the group. She had never even told me. I didn't even know she had a blood disorder. Never once did she, but she, every week, we would think about Matt. We think about him running on the beach with his little boys. We think about the dog, how we feel, what it looks like to see the posts on Facebook. Like, and we're feeling it. I've seen financial miracles. People not only experience a medical miracle, a miracle is a miracle. People's homes have been saved. I've seen that actually happen with a girl in my group. Love. Matches have been made. Miracles. So my power.
So we just got together for like, let's have a good event. I hope this message reaches people. I hope the calendar gets into people's hands, right? And Eleni's talking about how she's seeing, you know, right now we have Marriott as the sponsor and she's seeing all these sponsors. And she keeps saying Chase Bank. I keep seeing Chase Bank. So I'm like, well, I'm swearing shit. I'm going to hang up and contact Chase Bank. If Eleni's seeing Chase Bank, I'm reaching out to them. So it's not Chase Bank, but Humana has already agreed to sponsor this event for next year, right? And the women in the group, one of the women says, I just see you thanking people, you know, thanking the sponsors, right? And I'm crying saying, I just am telling people why I'm doing this. The calendars are reaching people. Well, I get an email for a sponsor before the event started. So Bobby Joe wants to know the name of the group. It is people getting together, supporting someone, whoever has something going on. Maybe it's medical. Eleni just said, Sam, do you want my group to give you love and support before the event? Yes, please. Because it's not about me or the event. It's about everyone grieving in this world. And no one knows it's National Grief Awareness Week. And how can we all support each other more? Right? So yes, when Jen says to me 10 days ago, my nephew, who, what's his name? I'm telling Eleni his name because we don't have to be there. She will say the names out loud of anybody struggling with whatever issue it is. So we all need to join the group. Let's put it in the chat. It's fabulous. And everyone there is coming with love and encouragement for, you know, Sam, we really hope healing together through the holidays just reaches people.
No, and here's the mind-blowing thing. You can choose to believe in whatever world you want. It's perspective, right? Put your hands up, flip it around. It looks different. Same hand. Everything's how we look at it. Social media might tell you how terrible this world is. The world I live in, I run a Power of Eight group with almost, I think we're up to 1,500 members, but they're literally from around the world. Somebody from the UK was on your call. I've had them with people from UK, South Africa, Germany, literally all over the world, just because they care. Because it's important to you, it's important to them. And they don't care if you're looking to manifest your dream house or you're healing a disease. They're going to support you. And Sam, something really interesting happened for you. Really interesting. I'm like, randomly, I get a friend request from a friend's father from many years ago. I never realized that one of his children had committed suicide and he owns a very large food company and his daughter's got a massive grief operation. And I'm like, I sent him a message that about the calendars. Like she's got a big organization. I just have such a good feeling about it. Let's all take the moment now that there's like no mistake in this because like he didn't have a profile picture. And if the dad had a profile picture, I probably just would have said yes. But I had to do some investigation, right? We got to make sure these people aren't bots. So I went on and I'm like, oh.
And that's Zoe. That's her daughter's. This is Zoe's picture.
She took my brother's loss really hard. But
right? But this is people all over. Somebody I didn't meet shows up. Like the there's hate in this world. We see horrible things every day, but these are people who show up just to say, I don't want to be a part of that. Yeah. I want to be a part of this.
Yep. Yep. Be the change, right? And that's, you know, we're literally grounding the miracle vibe. And if you think about people like the antennas, if you think about us as, you know, as we're feeling something, the energy is coming through us. If you're an energy conscious person, you're literally grounding a miracle vibe. You're literally grounding healing. You're literally grounding peace. When the world needs it most, you want to know how you get out the world? Sit down and make yourself a vessel of peace. Sit down and make yourself a vessel of love, unconditional love. And it's really easy to do when you're focused on something and somebody's cause. Now, I've seen incredible things happen. We had one Power of Eight group. The woman, it was a woman's mother, and she had cancer labeled throughout her entire uterus. She was like 80 years old, this woman. They were going to do surgery on her. And her daughter was very upset about it, wanted us to do a session. I'm like, she started telling, I'm like, no, tell me about your mother. She goes, my mother has a motorcycle. She rides her Harley all the time in where the Sequoias are. She likes to ride out on these beautiful adventures. I'm like, this is the coolest lady I've ever heard of. We've got to help this lady. So I'm like, tell me about it. I'm like, so just send me a picture. So we put her up. A lot of people show up from around the world. Her daughter shows up. We do the session. Now, while we're doing the session, her mother's actually living. She's somewhere. Now she's in Boston. She's going to a specialist before her surgery for her post-operation scan. She's already had several scans, enough scans that she's having her or pre-operation scan. I meant to say pre-operation scan. By the time, so she's en route. We're doing the session. Mom gets to the scan. The cancer's gone. Where did it go? How was it there 2 weeks before? But now it's not there. And I've seen this happen multiple times. I've seen it actually happen in real time. So, you know, anyway, so that's like the joy. And you should see when I get those posts and I put them in the group, how good do you feel knowing that your thoughts were part of that, right? Like, this is a world I get to be a part in where I can co-create miracles for my brothers and sisters. So for those of us in the situations that we're in right now, where we're dealing with maybe some darker or heavier emotions, let's just take a moment to expect the best for every one of ourselves. Like sometimes it's easy to get caught in people's stories when they're telling them to us and we're thinking about them struggling. No, think about them thriving. Think about them waking up and having a great day. Like sit there. It might feel challenging at first, but sit there and ground some love for them. Like, how would you feel if you got on GriefHab and you saw like the biggest smile on their face? Like, what would that look like on your screen? How would you feel in your heart? If you take a minute or two to tap into that, that's the secret sauce. Is the secret sauce.
Thank you so much. Will you put that in the notes so these guys can join the Power of Eight?
Yeah,
is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's but I think it's like actually the word eight. Hold on, let me look on my phone because we're on my device right now. I can tell you right now. It's me and my buddy Carl. We were on this group. He was like, I can't believe how much it's grown. Every day, people from around the world just keep joining and I highly encourage you to check out, I'm gonna type her name in as soon as I look up the Power of Eight. Lynn McTiger. If you find this interesting, her books are fascinating. But it's the power of our thoughts. So it just should and when you start to think about that kind of stuff, it's like, oh crap, I better be aware of my thoughts. Better make sure I'm vigilant on my thoughts. Power of Eight. It's the Power of Eight Healing Group. It's kind of got like a mountain and black lettering. But yeah, we host sessions anytime we're called to. So, and don't, you know, and what I love is that I see people who know that they're worthy, who know that there's possibility. Like I live in a world full of people who know that anything's possible. And that their cause, whether big or seemingly small, is valuable. And it gives me a chance to show up. So I'm just grateful for that. Really grateful for that.
Thank you so much for your time, your story, being you. Love you so much. And I will talk to you soon.
Yeah. Bye, ladies.
Thanks so much for listening today. Your support means everything to me, truly. If this podcast resonates with you, please do me a favor and join in the Ruthless movement by making some noise and doing one of these four things. Subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Tell a friend so we can break stigmas even faster. Leave a review so people can see what you think of the show. And last, if you want to learn more about me and be a part of the GriefHab community, please head on over to the Facebook group. We'd love to have you. Thanks again for spending your time with us, and see you next week.